Hello from Stockholm, and my name is Niklas Hellman, and I have been given a very nice opportunity to discuss this paper. It concerns very important accounting issues, and I much enjoyed reading it. And I believe the paper highlights the need to improve current standards related to intangible assets. So I only have 15 minutes, so I will focus on some topics and areas where I think there is room for some further developments. And I'll start with talking about the single project versus portfolio aspects here. So most of the argumentation in the paper starts out from a single project perspective. Portfolio aspects and unit of account considerations are mentioned a few times. But as the ambition is to put forward new general solutions, I think the single project versus portfolio aspects may be further clarified and developed. There is good reason to start out from a single project view, as standards and professional judgment will concern asset separability and finding appropriate amortization schedules for each project. And I think one aspect there, single project view, is this amortization schedule that is referred to quite often. And both IAS 38 and IAS 16 suggest that the amortization and depreciation patterns shall reflect the consumption of economic benefits, that is the future cash flow patterns. And I think it's good there if one relates a bit to the economic depreciation. And just to remind us what I'm talking about here, if we have a cash flow pattern where we expect decreasing cash flows over time, what depreciation pattern would we then say would match with that? Well, that would be a degressive pattern, right? If you develop a new software and you launch it to the market, in the beginning you will receive big cash net inflows, which when they are realized decreases the present value a lot, which means a big depreciation or amortization. If we, on the other hand, have a cash flow pattern with increasing cash flows, well, then obviously we are realizing small cash flows in the beginning and larger, greater on. So we would have a progressive pattern that matches that. If we have constant cash flows, well, in that case, it would be a progressive pattern, right? If you think about the analogy of an annuity loan, for example, small repayment in the beginning and a lot of interest and vice versa at the end. And that means that if we then think about the situation where we have straight line depreciation, what cash flow pattern does that relate to? That is what we usually see companies use in practice. But in the standards, either in IAS 16 or in IAS 38, there is no preference for straight line. And if we think have a decreasing and a degressive depreciation, and then when we had constant cash flows, we had increasing depreciation, we realize that if we're looking for the straight line, what we will have as a cash flow pattern will be slightly decreasing cash flows, right? That is the particular situation where you would have a low probability of impairment in that if you expect slightly decreasing cash flows in the future. But that is quite unusual. But still, it's no preference in the standards here to use straight line. So that could be further put forward, I think, if this is part of the solution to have better amortization schedules. Now, having said that, I think among the examples that are offered in the paper, I think there is one that you might want to consider, and that is the accounting for subsequent costs. Some years ago, IAS 16 was revised where we have the maintain enhance approach, where you capitalize only when the asset is enhanced. And then you have the components approach, where you capitalize when asset components are replaced. And the ISB then came to the conclusion that there are these difficulties in practice with this maintain enhance principle, and that in fact expenditures, some would maintain and some would enhance, and in fact some expenditures seems to do both. So this is actually a case, I believe, where you have both a base asset to start with, then you have the separability of the asset component, and then you have appreciation linked to that particular case. And some years ago, when I was trying to convince here in Sweden the choice of the components approach, I actually used the purple economic depreciation here as a and introduced that pattern to see which approach best fits the economic depreciation. And you can see the components approach here, the red line is the one that is closest to the purple line, especially when the asset gets old. This is a 100-year real estate project. And I think this might be an example that might be useful in the paper, since it includes both the base asset, the asset separability, and the amortization, finding an appropriate amortization schedule. But so far, that was the single project. Then there is also the ECO portfolios. So in the appendix one, there is a description here of looking at the portfolio instead of just one project at a time, so to speak. And there is a reference here saying that if there is no growth in investment, then you have this steady state where you have canceling errors. And this is a well-known concept. But in the paper, it's referred to as an unrealistic case here because of the no growth. I think perhaps it deserves a little bit more appreciation, because it is very common for companies to actually invest every year, building up intangible resources. So the portfolio perspective, I think, is valid. And also, that is something that has been very much discussed in the school that I work in, the canceling errors. Of course, it's possible to also introduce growth to this and to discuss what happens under those circumstances. But having said that, if we take even a step further then to have these portfolios of projects with a very high level of uncertainty. So if we think about the high levels of uncertainty and we think about the portfolio perspective here, what I think many companies also do here is that they try to form what you might call balanced portfolios. You start new projects every year. You know that they are highly uncertain, but you try to get a balanced situation. And some years ago, I ran an executive education course for financial managers. And then there was this manager from AstraZeneca, you know, the pharmaceutical company who is now trying to find this vaccine for the coronavirus. And he said, for a successful pharmaceutical project, this is the cash flow pattern. You have big investments in the beginning, higher as you get to start to test the medicine on people. Then you have the launch phase with very, very high payments to convince the doctors to switch to the new drug. And then if it's successful, you will have a period of long selling phase before the patent expires. Now, if you think about this cash flow pattern for a successful project, and then you look at AstraZeneca's numbers here some years ago, and you can see what happens to their margins over time. So in the beginning, it's a balanced portfolio. And you can see the margins, 22%-23%. But then the balanced portfolio then gradually becomes unbalanced. So they are striving for a balanced portfolio, but the margins are starting to increase, 25%, 30%, almost 34%. So what are we seeing here? Well, we are seeing for a balanced portfolio getting unbalanced, a complete disaster. That's why the margin is going up, right? Because what you have here is that they have failures of R&D projects just before the launch, okay? And in the middle of the R&D. And if you lose project that for there for your balanced portfolio, they don't move into the launch phase. And you have a period, a temporary period here of increasing margins, where it's very hard to interpret the income statement. And in this case, these were big R&D failures, for example, the drug Xanta. So what I think here is would be good in the paper is to have a further discussion of the balanced portfolio, because I think that is what many companies do. And I think the effects need to be evaluated for on a portfolio basis, even though we make the recognition and measurement decisions for separate projects.
Nicholas, you've got 3 minutes left.
Oh, that's a lot, right? I thought my time would be out now. So let me then touch upon a few final issues then. So in the paper, there is a suggestion here that tangibility is not the determining economic feature. And I think the argumentation is convincing. Then on the other hand, what's the alternative? So one possible alternative to consider is perhaps monetary versus non-monetary assets. But if you introduce that, you get into the realized versus unrealized holding gains. Now, the authors are very focused on the investment here, on the expenditure, and I agree with that. But I think it's also important to realize that as a general framework, we must remember that there will be companies. You have an example here from the French company Total, right? That you will have to make a separation between holding gains and business profit. That will be an issue in some types of companies. And of course, that relates also to fixed assets. Another alternative would be to look at what was proposed for liabilities some years ago in the 2005 exposure draft, and to talk about non-financial assets versus financial assets. Maybe it's worth looking at the liabilities. And speaking about that, in that exposure draft, there is also the proposal of using expected value to a greater extent. You mentioned if you have 99% probability of failing and 1% probability of succeeding, and then you say rational expectations would tell you to impair it, but the issue of expected value here was seen as the way to deal with it for liabilities. Maybe that is something to consider also for assets. You mentioned in the paper uncertainty 70 times, but you never mention even once prudence, and that I guess is on purpose. Still, as a reader, you will think a little bit, why is that the case? Why don't you mention prudence here when you talk so much about uncertainty? Another issue when we talk about asset and asset composition here, perhaps some reference to Edwards and Bell would be in place here as they start out from that setting, how to the composition problem, so to speak. So I think I'll finish there, and thank you very much for listening to my comments.